Welcome to another episode of Spanish History 101 brought to you by Brian Spain Domain. The year is 1598 and the famous King Philip II, Felipe II, has died, ending an immense century of transformation for Spain, something almost unthinkable 100 years before. His death led to our next king, Felipe III, who was born in 1578, was proclaimed king in 1598, and he ushered in the next stage of Spanish history, the 17th century, sometimes known as the Age of the Minor Austrias, because the following three kings are less known, less influential, and less successful than the previous ones. We use the word Austria because the Habsburgs were sometimes referred to as the House of Austria. These monarchs have gone down in history somewhat forgotten and regarded as generally poor rulers. But remember, we are talking about a Spain that is still a very powerful empire, even though its power and influence is a bit on the decline. It's still very powerful and very influential. And there's a lot to talk about. So, who are these rulers? They are Felipe III, who reigns from 1598 to 1621, Felipe IV, who reigns from 1621 to 1665, and Carlos II, who reigns from 1665 to 1700. With the death of Carlos, the Habsburg dynasty itself will die out in Spain, leading to a massive war of succession and a change of dynasty, as well as a new direction for Spain. But today we will focus on Felipe III and Felipe IV and save Carlos II and the War of Succession for the next episode. Now, one of the most notable aspects of this period, and one that's often mentioned when we talk about these kings, from a governing standpoint, is the increased role of the personal minister or advisor. In Spain, the name is valido, which is sort of like valid with an O. And in English, it would be the equivalent of the king or queen's favorite. A personal assistant, an individual in whom the king or the queen had the greatest trust. It's a chosen position, it's not official, and it doesn't really pertain to any office, although some people consider it sort of as a precursor to the prime minister. But basically, this was a close and personal advisor, a major influencer who often wielded too much power. Felipe III has often been overlooked as a ruler. It is true that he had a pretty tough act to follow, and unfortunately, he was known for being somewhat of a simple man, somewhat feeble-minded, very religious, that is true, and a big fan of the arts and theater. But what he really loved, apparently, was hunting, which is why he is sometimes referred to as the Hunter King. But his reign was an interesting one, and there's a lot to say, because basically, remember, Spain at this point was reaching almost its maximum size as an empire. It was about as big as it gets, so there was a lot to do. Unfortunately for the country, its ruler, Felipe III, didn't seem to be particularly interested in those matters, which is why he almost immediately handed over the reins to his valido, a man named Francisco de Sandoval y Rojas, more commonly known as the Duke of Lerma. Lerma is a town just south of the city of Burgos. And there's a beautiful palace there, which the Duke built when he was in power. Now, one of the first things the Duke does is talk the king into moving the capital of Spain from Madrid to Valladolid, which is a city about 200 kilometers northwest of Madrid, arguing that it would be best for the monarchy since Madrid was no longer a suitable capital. This seemed like a rather radical and random decision, but it was driven by less than ethical motives. You see, the Duke, it turns out, was a Class A scammer. And realizing that his boss, the king, was simple-minded and not really at all a hands-on ruler, he took advantage of the situation to cash in. He bought huge amounts of property in Valladolid, vetting that once the capital was moved there and the members of the court and the monarchy had to move there, the value of the property would go sky high. And that's pretty much what happened. This was in 1601. Then 5 years later, the Duke talked him into going back to Madrid. By this time, the value of property in Madrid had plummeted. So he bought loads of property there before the decision to return was made. Once again, the value shot up as people had to move back in, and there he was, available to sell it back to them. So basically, he made a killing, and this, my friends, was the man running the country. Despite the immensity of the territory that Spain controlled, and all the wealth that came in on a fairly steady flow, Spain continued to struggle economically. The government had defaulted 3 times in the 16th century, and now for a 4th time in 1607 for a number of reasons related to debt and erroneous currency policies. Another major moment in Felipe III's reign took place in 1609 when the Duke of Lerma convinced the king to back him on the decision to expel the Moriscos from Spain. The Moriscos were Moors who had converted to Christianity as a way of avoiding the previous expulsion of the Moors in the late 1500s. Despite this, friction continued between the two communities, and the Moriscos never seemed to really integrate. On top of that, the locals were suspicious of their intentions, of their loyalty to Spain, of their faith. So the decision, in addition to being racist and religiously motivated, created havoc for Spain and affected its productivity. In the end, some 300,000 Moriscos were believed to have been expelled. On the international front, this period would constitute a period of relative peace for Spain, which was something that wasn't easy to come by in the Europe of the 17th century when they were constantly at war. This, in hindsight, may have been one of the Duke of Lerma's biggest successes. And I say relative peace because not everything was peaceful in those days, but it was better than usual. For example, in 1604, they managed to end years and years of fighting against the English when they signed the Treaty of London. Those wartime years included the famous Spanish Armada in 1588. So both sides agreed that it was enough and they could move on. Then in 1609, a truce was established with the Dutch in the Low Countries. If you recall, this is a territory that was more or less under Spanish occupation, but the two sides were constantly fighting. So they managed 12 years of peace in that department. So yes, things were calmer, but it was short-lived because in 1618, Spain got sucked into the devastating 30 Years' War. This was a major conflict that combined religious issues as well as dynastic ones, namely the Habsburgs versus the Bourbons. As a major member of the Habsburg family, the Spanish were compelled to participate, and even though most of the theater of military operations took place mainly in Central Europe, Spain was depleted of economic, military, and personnel resources at a time when it could little afford it. On a personal level, Felipe III married once, and was apparently truly devoted to his wife, Margaret of Austria, who was his first cousin once removed. He was also faithful to her, a fact that was rare among monarchs at that time. They married in 1599 when she was just 15, and together they had a whopping 8 children before she died at the age of 26 while giving birth to their smallest child, Alfonso. Margaret was said to be very religious and very cultured and was also believed to have a keen sense of handling state matters. She did not have a very kind view of the Duke of Lerma and worked with others to try to get rid of him, but she died before she could see that happen. Anyway, the opponents of the Duke finally caught up with him and managed to have him thrown out of the court in 1618. to prevent further disgrace, criminal accountability, and a loss of wealth, he sought the help of the Pope, Paul V, who made him a cardinal, no less, thus granting him immunity from any liability of wrongdoing. In 1621, when Philippe III was about to die, he pardoned a long list of convicted criminals, but he didn't pardon the Duke, which is rather ironic. Felipe died that year, and the Duke of Lerma would die 4 years later in Valladolid. Felipe's son, also called Felipe, would become the next king and was known as Felipe IV, or sometimes the Planet King, thanks to the massive amounts of dominions that were under his power during his life. He would reign all the way up until 1665. Now, for years, Felipe IV was viewed as a ruler that was somewhat similar to his father in terms of indifference, ineptitude, and failure. But over the years, historians have tended to view his reign under a more favorable light. In contrast to his father, he was a bright and alert man with a good sense of humor. He was also cultured and well-versed in the arts and theater. He was said to be affable and easy to engage with. But he also placed a lot of faith in his advisors, especially Gaspar de Guzmán, who was known more famously as the Count Duke of Olivares. Olivares was an energetic man, a tireless worker, passionate about his projects. He didn't seem to have been motivated by seeking personal financial fortune the way the Duke of Lerma was. In fact, he is said to have lived a fairly simple lifestyle, but he had grandiose plans for the country, which in part would lead it to partial ruin. Let's start with his foreign policy. While the reign of his father, Felipe III, was marked by a period of relative peacefulness, Felipe IV, at the insistence of the Count Duke of Olivares, adopted a more assertive attitude towards Spain's position in world politics and in world affairs. In other words, they tried to restore Spain's top place in Europe, and it pretty much failed miserably. During Felipe's reign, Spain was basically at war nonstop. The 12-year truce with the Netherlands ended in 1621. By that time, Spain was involved in the costly 30 Years' War. And as we said before, even though most of the battles and the violence took place in other parts of Europe, the cost in human, material, and economic resources was ponderous, to say the least. And then later on, France took an ever more active role in the fighting, and tensions between the two nations increased, and since they are next-door neighbors, conflicts would spill over into Spain itself, especially Catalonia. Spain, during his reign, would relinquish its control over the Netherlands once and for all in 1648 under the Treaty of Munster, and Portugal, an associate member of this Iberian Union. And that's because Felipe IV of Spain is actually Felipe III of Portugal, so different countries but the same king. But it appears that Olivares wanted to bring Portugal somewhat into more control by Castile. They increased taxes, they removed the Portuguese from many of the important government posts, and they also attempted to draw the Portuguese into European wars, as well as demand that they contribute to paying for them. This did not go well with the Portuguese, and they declared independence in 1640. At home, things fared little better. Olivares seemed intent on bringing the different parts of Spain closer to a real unification. I will explain this once again. Even though Spain is often considered to be one nation at this time, the fact is, from a jurisdiction standpoint, it's not really the case. There are different kingdoms and regions that still have a lot of autonomy. They have their own institutions, their own laws, etc. There's a lot of mutual cooperation, but the king sometimes has to tread carefully about how he does things. But that didn't mean they didn't try, or at least Olivares. One was the famous Union of Arms Act in 1626, which attempted to sort of spread the burden of these wars among the different parts of Spain in terms of expenses and material, and especially manpower. It was based on population, so there was sort of like a quota. Castile was by far the largest of the kingdoms, so it was going to contribute the most. And there's a sense that Felipe IV and Olivares probably figured that this was a fair deal and that everyone would see it that way. But basically, that was not true because many of the other regions and kingdoms felt that it transgressed their power to make that decision, which was true. Down the road, this would prove disastrous for the monarchy. For example, in 1640, renewed attempts to tax these regions would put things over the edge. As we know, the Portuguese would leave, and the Andalusians would revolt. And then the Catalans would launch a crisis that almost resulted in Spain falling apart. This crisis started a few years before, when the French and the Spanish were not on good terms. Olivares had a major plan to actually invade France. And France saw Catalonia as a weak spot in Spain's domestic power. When it reached a point that it looked as if the French were going to invade Spain through Catalonia, Olivares sent troops there, mainly to thwart that invasion, though there is some debate about the true intentions of the Valido at the time. In any event, all hell broke loose, the Catalans revolted, and it was a big mess. Now, I won't go into the details today because it's far too complicated, but suffice it to say that this was essentially a power struggle between Castile and Catalonia. It won't be the last, as we all know. The French invaded, but they were pushed back, and the Catalans also got the feeling that the French were probably going to try to do more to control Catalonia's self-rule wishes than they had hoped for. So they sort of were no longer interested in the French being there for the most part. In 1652, Catalonia's institutions are restored and things begin to calm down. But by then, Olivares was long gone in the government. In fact, he had died in 1645. So the legacy of this man is a bit mixed. He's certainly a dynamic figure, someone who probably sought glory as a proactive minister and administrator and enjoyed being that figure and enjoyed being in the limelight. But he has gone down in history as a person who tried to centralize the power of the monarch by overstepping the boundaries of jurisdiction and sovereignty, and his policies were not well received by many of the regions and kingdoms of Spain. But he had a lot of ideas, and possibly some of them weren't bad, but they just weren't able to work. For example, early on, Olivares made a huge effort to solve a lot of the problems of Spain, especially the economic problems, which were just dragging the country down over and over again. They were dragged down by debt, inflation, and a lack of clear policy and vision. There was a lot of wealth coming into the nation from the Americas especially, but instead of reinvesting in infrastructure and industry, much of it went to wars, paying off debt, and personal expenses. So the private commercial sector was slow to come, in big part because he was meeting a lot of resistance from powerful people with other interests in mind. Anyway, Felipe would replace Olivares with another valido until 1661, and then for this final 4 years, sort of ruled Spain on his own. Moving on to a little gossip, Felipe's love life must be mentioned. His first wife was Elizabeth of France, whom he married officially when he was only 10. She was actually only 13, so this was the official date of the marriage. They had to wait a few more years before they could actually live as a married couple. Elizabeth died in 1644, but unfortunately their only surviving son, Baltasar Carlos, died 2 years later. He then married again. This time it was his niece, Mariana of Austria. She was only 14 at the time. I think he was 42. Mariana was actually Baltasar Carlos's bride-to-be, but when he died and when they didn't have a male heir, well, a young bride was needed for the purpose of having children. That was the way things were done back then. And they had a son who would become the future King Carlos II. But it should be noted that if his father, Felipe III, was considered to be basically monogamous, his son can be ranked as one of the most notorious sex addicts in history, if we are to go by what has been said about him, even by half of what has been said about him. He apparently started young and engaged in the activity often, and the number of mistresses, lovers, one-time encounters is purported to be so high it's incalculable. But we can get an idea from the number of illegitimate children he had. You see, in addition to the 12 children he had with his two wives, he had officially 7 illegitimate children, of which he recognized 2. But real estimates of the true number of kids born out of wedlock is actually closer to 30 and possibly even more. He was apparently insatiable. On the other hand, it is said that Felipe was a good father, a loving father, and pretty much a very personable man, so he had a very complex personality indeed. In his final years, he devoted much of his time in correspondence with a cloistered abbess named Maria de Agreda, who was a well-known mystical writer of the time, as well as a nun. They wrote somewhere in the neighborhood of 600 letters to each other, and she became a major influence on the king late in life. So maybe he had a change of heart. Anyway, both Felipe III and Felipe IV were also said to be big fans of the arts and humanities, such as painting, literature, and especially theater, and it was a great time to have interest in those areas. We are talking about the heart of the golden age of Spanish creativity, of Spanish writing and painting. These were splendid days for the stage with great playwrights like Tirso de Molina, Lope de Vega, and Calderón de la Barca churning out plays like hotcakes. And then you had the great writers, Cervantes, who published the first part of Don Quixote in 1605, and it was an immediate success. Part 2 came out 10 years later in 1615, a year before he died. By the way, Shakespeare and Cervantes died one day apart. Sometimes they say it was the same day, but I think officially they actually died on separate days. As for painting, this was the age of Diego de Velázquez, unquestionably one of the finest painters of his day and of all time. His most famous work, Las Meninas, ranks consistently as one of the most important paintings in history. And there were also many other great painters like Zurbarán, Rivera, and the list goes on and on. So, 1665, we will stop there. And that will be all for this episode of Spanish History 101. I hope you've enjoyed it. Please leave us any comments or questions because we love the feedback. You can subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, Apple, Amazon, and Castos. Or if you wish to support Brian Spain Domain, we'd greatly appreciate it. We work very hard to provide you with the best information about Spain, Spanish history, Spanish culture. You can do so by clicking on our PayPal donate button on our website, or if you want to have access to absolutely all of our podcasts and support us regularly, you can check us out on Patreon at the link provided below. Stay well, stay safe, and hasta pronto.